You're listening to Panel Borders on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is Resonance's weekly show about the world of comics. In this week's show, concluding our month of shows looking at portrayals of illness, medicine, and caregiving in comic books, you'll hear a talk by Ian Williams, aka cartoonist Tom Ferrier, about his work, recorded at a meeting of Ladies Do Comics at Brick Lane in East London, with a Q&A following Ian's talk, featuring questions from myself and psychotherapist-turned-comic book writer Philippa Perry, among others. First, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner, FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, radio, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
Hello, Mike. Ian Williams. This should probably be known as, also unknown as, Tom Ferrier. I do a web site and a web comic under the nom de plume of Tom Ferrier, and I'll explain a bit about why I use a nom de plume. Well, up until about 6 weeks ago, for the last 12 years, I've been working part-time as a GP in a little town in North Wales. If you go to Snowdonia, you may have passed through. It's on the London to Holyhead Road, but you probably haven't stopped there. While I've been working there, I've worked there part-time mostly. I was kind of into art in school, and then I decided to go to medical school, and I went to medical school in Cardiff, but I'd always painted and drawn, and when I qualified, I went back to art school part-time, and I did like a postgrad certificate in fine art, and I've kind of, for most of the last 10 years anyway, I've worked part-time as a GP, and that's kind of subsidised the sort of painting and printmaking side of it. So I kind of, I paint and I print, and they're mostly kind of landscape-based, abstracted sort of landscape stuff, and I'm a printmaker too. So I was looking a few years ago for something that kind of married the two sides of my career, if you like. And I thought of going back to college to do an MA in art, but I actually ended up deciding to do an MA in a thing called Medical Humanities, which is an interdisciplinary subject that looks critically at medicine using the conceptual tools, if you like, of the arts and social sciences. So it's not really about... It can be about using art in medicine and kind of art therapy, but it's not really about that. What Medical Humanities is about is looking at medicine and sort of critiquing medicine from lots of different points of view, if you like, from an anthropological point of view or a sociological point of view, or through the arts or through literature, and looking at kind of what medicine's all about. Obviously, I had to write a dissertation, and when I went into this, I wasn't sure what I was going to do for my dissertation, but I kind of figured, actually, it came to me that what actually marries the two is kind of my love of comics. You know, I've always been into comics, and 10, 12 years ago, I was into comics when I was younger, and then I was sort of started to kind of get back into like graphic novels and what have you. And I started to look around, and I found that there were quite a lot of graphic novels written by people who had sort of been through illness experiences, and written autobiographical graphic novels. And I thought, well, that's worth looking at. So I looked around, and the more you look, you find loads of stuff that is kind of relevant to medicine without kind of trying to medicalize everything. I was ages getting around to writing my dissertation, so as a kind of procrastination device, I set up a website which kind of was starting to put my thoughts, I suppose, about some of these works on it. And through this, there were obviously other people out there who were interested in the same thing, and people got in touch, including Columba, and there are obviously other people out there looking in very similar fields, and I was kind of amazed at how many people were kind of out there, and at the same time I was sort of drawing comics, and these I thought I put these on the web, and I thought, right, I've got to use a pseudonym, because I didn't really want my patients to know who was doing these things, because they might not kind of quite understand. Or that, well, it was more that they would start looking, oh, I know who that is. Yeah, that's me. Or, and you, it would be hard to kind of avoid speculation, if you like. So I kind of used this pseudonym. And initially, they were just kind of these little gag strips, really, about... I was sort of interested in what happens if you go and see your doctor, but the doctor's actually become psychotic and sort of, you know, nobody's told them. And which, you know, happens. I've known that happen twice. And it's kind of tragic for the doctor involved, but there's sort of a bit of comedic potential there, if you like. So, or what happens if... one of your patients was actually somebody you knew when you were younger who bullied you at school and was like really horrible to you, and maybe they recognised you or maybe they didn't, and what you're kind of like, you know, how would you handle that stuff? Which, again, you know, I know cases of things like that have happened. You know, people often go work as a GP in the town that they grew up, and they're seeing people who they knew when they were at school, or people whose kids now bully their kids or whatever, and they've got to kind of try and retain this professional veneer while they actually hate them, you know. So I started then kind of doing stuff that was a bit more kind of personal, if you like, about my own neuroses. And this was another reason to use a kind of pseudonym, if you like. This is sort of like in the tradition of people like Joe Matt, I suppose, or whatever, like making yourself look a complete idiot. But, you know, most of it, which is true. And then... So I am a complete neurotic and kind of I worry about lots of things. Or what about like the kind of psychological damage that, you know, being a GP does to people, not just GP, but being involved with kind of other people's, you know, misery or other people's trauma, how it affects you taking on this kind of a kind of burden, if you like, of other people's problems, which I think it is. I think it is quite, you know, dangerous and damaging. So I put these on my website, and then I finished my MA, and then I met Columba up at a conference that we were both up in Dundee, and Columba and I and Maru Vakareya from King's started talking about we should have a conference on this, and, you know, we should get this set up and do it in London and sort of take the initiative, if you like. So we've set this conference up, we've got sponsorship from the Wellcome Trust, and then I started doing a kind of a web comic, if you like, a web series. I thought, I've been trying for ages to kind of organise like a year off medicine to really concentrate on the comic side of it, and I couldn't actually... It was impossible to organise a sabbatical, so I ended up, I just thought, right, I'll resign. And I've kind of left my practice, and I thought, I'll kind of just do this for as long as I can kind of survive on, and then I can always, you know, go back and do locums or whatever. And I got a small grant from the Arts Council of Wales because I wanted to kind of just do like this kind of graphic narrative, and I've put it online one page at a time. And it's about... I thought I'd make it about a female GP, so it's kind of less obviously autobiographical. So this is Dr. Lois Pritchard, who works in a small South Wales market town. It's kind of, she's a kind of 40-something single GP with some kind of dark secrets in her past, which... they haven't sort of been specified as yet, but she's got a kind of a backstory there. And it's about sort of, I suppose, it's partly about the sort of frustrations inherent in the job. She likes her patients in general, but sometimes finds them a bit infuriating. But her main gripe really is with her colleagues, which she is about to fall out big style with when she keeps winding one of them up. He's a kind of evangelical, kind of sort of Christian fundamentalist guy, and she's kind of deliberately kind of ragging him. Put a little kind of just a handmade kind of comic up there if you want to look at it or buy it. A colleague, I showed it to a kind of colleague of mine, and he was reading it, and he kind of got some of it, I think, and was a bit baffled by some of it. And then he got to this thing, he said, well, that's obviously you there. He said, why have you put that on there? And I said, well, don't you ever feel like that? And he sort of said, and he looked at me as if I was completely mad, and he just, no. Well, that said quite a lot about the medical profession. But if anybody wants to ask me any questions about it.
Ian, can I ask you about the fact that she's a female? And was that partly to make it less potentially autobiographical sounding or seeming, or does that also, how difficult was it for you to sort of get it right as a
It is to try and make it less autobiographical, I suppose, and to try and sort of force myself into it, because most of the short strips I've been doing were kind of based on, you know, the character in it was kind of me, basically, so it's to force myself into a fictional kind of thing, and I thought people could, you know, even, I thought if I have a bloke doing it, it's fictional. I could make him a very old GP or somebody that looks just very not likely, but some people will still kind of, you know, say that to you. And I didn't think it was, I thought it would be interesting to try and get into a female doctor's mindset, but I didn't think it's that hard, to be honest, because I don't think that, you know, I know plenty of women doctors who are more macho than a lot of male doctors, and sort of, you know, I think, you know, this sort of the feminine, masculine kind of, it's a spectrum, isn't it? And I didn't think that I should worry too much about, like, perceived sort of great differences between the sexes, because I don't, you know, it's a spectrum, and I think I can probably think like a woman if I want, and I just, you know, imagine it, and you know. So I didn't see it as a big problem, although I've no doubt that I will be criticised for it, because people will kind of make assumptions about, I don't know, the type of woman I'm portraying or whatever. And I've kind of, Lois is, she is sort of somebody who is, if you like, she's kind of obsessed with staying thin, fitness, she's maybe got a bit of issues with food, and I suppose that is based because actually I know quite a lot of people like that, and I kind of thought it would be an interesting way of feeding into kind of some of her backstory. And so,
do you like her?
Do I like her? Yeah, yeah, I do.
I guess this question, I don't know if I have it very articulated, but as just a person in the world going to see doctors from time to time, it seems like the best ones have this thing called bedside manner, where you have a sense of their empathy. And you don't see it very often, but every once in a while you do see what is sort of a magical formula when there is this, this moment where you feel like you're really being cared for by this person, whether it's a therapist or a doctor. But I noticed it didn't come up today. So I'm just wondering, do you think it's a myth?
Is
the role of empathy?
It isn't. Well, it's much debated, the role of empathy, actually. I mean, there's within medical humanities, there are people writing, you know, academic papers on empathy, whether it's real, whether it is useful, whether it exists. I think it exists. And I think that, you know, and I think it also exerts a toll. I think that healthcare professionals, if you are empathic with people, with the people that you're dealing with, it exerts a toll on you, and it kind of actually kind of burns you out. And I think that doctors deal with it in various ways. You can either kind of carry this burden and internalize it and actually become, it grinds you down. Well, that's been my experience. I find it really mentally and emotionally knackering to sort of sit there all day and talk to very interesting people about, you know, sometimes it's about nice stuff, but a lot of it is about really tragic, sort of traumatic stuff, and that does take a toll. I think that doctors are, when I was reading Couch Fiction, the way that James kind of like dissociates, isn't it, from kind of when he's the feelings are getting too much, he kind of blanks it out, and I think that that's the way that a lot of healthcare professionals react, because I think that that is one way of dealing with it. People kind of get fatigue, you know, empathy fatigue or whatever. And there are an awful lot of completely burnt out doctors out there, because they're trapped into it. It's a very well paid job. You've got a lot of respect, if you like, you know, despite what the kind of tabloids kind of like, the way that the tabloids have go at, you know, GPs or whatever. GPs on the whole are very well respected, and it's the only job where you can kind of walk into somebody's house and, you know, without a kind of warrant and sort of, you know, just they won't call the police on you or something. You can just walk into their house and go hi and walk into their bedroom or whatever, and it's a very privileged job, and but it takes its toll, and there are a lot of people who probably should have some time out or whatever, and kind of or have some therapy, and but don't, because it's kind of well paid, and they've got kids at private school and they drive big cars or whatever, so they're just trapped into this money making thing.
A lot of half your clients as a psychotherapist are usually doctors.
Well, I think therapists have, because you have.
What we have, because we have the same thing, we have been empathetic, and we have to be empathetic, that's part of the job. There's no question about if you're not empathetic, you're not working for a psychotherapist, you wouldn't even get any clients. And so, to be empathetic, you literally have to feel the other's pain. And you can't just pretend to feel it, you feel it, and that does take its toll, and that's what caused burnout. What therapists do, for every so many hours they work as a therapist, they then debrief with somebody called a supervisor. A supervisor isn't like somebody that supervises the tills at Sainsbury's. A supervisor is another psychotherapist who is empathetic towards that psychotherapist, and so, you know, we just pass it round the whole time. We can pass the parcel with all this pain, and it actually does help. But having said that, it is good to take a year out.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
I think it's interesting, like, these, and also about your work as well, that you've been on all these things, it's like, it's revealing all these, well, being a mother, a lot of people here are mothers and they talk, and being this person who's meant to be omniscient, as a mother you're meant to know exactly what's wrong with your baby from the start, and be in charge, and as a doctor, and as a psychotherapist, and it's like all these graphic works that I'm seeing today are debunking that myth and actually showing the human side of all these people and saying, no, you know, we actually can't continue this facade of being perfect, or like, you know, the doctor at the end going, so could have any mothers at the end of the day just going, whereas we're supposed to be like.
It's very difficult. Medicine is a tremendously macho. Is that the right word? Macho culture. It's hard to.
It's a masculine discipline. Yeah,
I think Quincy and House have done a lot of damage. Yeah. To the role of the average doctor.
Well, I'm not talking in terms of sort of sex here, but.
But in a way, Ian, you are, because it's about when you're saying the GP walks into a room and it's the status. There's a certain power that the GP has in our society, which is based on. It's from science, it's from the GP knows the truth. And in a way, in a sense, that's why psychology, it hasn't been done, that sort of bearing, because it's such a new science. Mm. It's competing with the great, the knowledge.
But it works to some extent, it works both ways. I think society and culture meets the Goldline figures. They collude with
definitely.
And being a GP in. Being a GP in a small rural community in North Wales is very different from probably working in London or working in certainly in Cardiff, you know. So it's a kind of much more traditional role. And when I first started, somebody came to me and said, I don't know, I was kind of, they were asking me a question. I sort of said, And I was being like a bit apologetic, well, you could do that if you want, or you could do that. And they sort of said, well, just tell me what to do, because, like, to us, you're God. Like, and I thought, well, I don't want to be God. Like, you know, that's a bit kind of, like, much to live up to. But, you know, they were exaggerating slightly. But in general, it is a hell of a kind of, it is a hell of a thing to live up to. But what I was saying about medicine is it's a very kind of competitive type of thing to work in, and showing weakness is not really done. And especially, medical schools might be better now, but when I was at medical school, it was just showing kind of weakness, not, you know, not being kind of hard, not being up to it. It was kind of real, you know, it wasn't something you did. It was kind of like you had to kind of have this facade that you were already, like, you know.
But you can do 80 hours as a junior doctor and you can take it.
Well, and when I was a junior doctor, we were still doing, you know, we used to work tremendously long hours, and it wasn't done to go off sick. If you went off sick, you were kind of worse. And, you know, I remember doing whole kind of weekends, long weekends, where I had, during flu epidemics, where both me and my SHO, who's immediate above me, we both had flu. We were kind of dropping on our feet, but we wouldn't, neither of us would go off. So then we were probably infecting the patients that came in, but you just did not go off because there was nobody else to do it. And it was just this kind of macho thing. That is different now. I think junior doctors are much more into, these are my hours, I'm working that, I'm only contracted to that. I think it's completely changed over the past 20 years. I think doctors would benefit from just kind of admitting a few of their faults of their humanity sometimes, and some do, and obviously some do.
But works like your book, when it is published, and it will be, this is really, I think it's really good. I think that will really educate the whole field when you challenge the idealised transplants that doctors are operating and colluding with. Yeah. They can't do it any longer.
Although, in a sense, sorry to have to say this, Ian, but it's a slight shame. It is a woman because of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Because you've just given us this portrait of medicine as this male dominant macho thing, and then
but she's got
what
but
might be what I don't know, but what might be read of the book, it's not medicine, it's the woman doctor who had issues about being fit, you know. I'm just imagining,
but the book isn't necessarily the book isn't necessarily about that. The strips that I was doing, which have got kind of me in it as a kind of my avatar or whatever, that was about that. The book is more like a novel, you know, like a fictional account. And I suppose her kind of colleagues are both male, and maybe, you know, they are going to kind of personify some of the problems about it.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's handy.
And she is not. She's not. How to put it? I mean, I don't see her sex as being a sort of like an issue one way or the other, I suppose.
But I'm not saying it's new. I'm just anticipating possibly the reader or the media. You know, I don't know. It's just something. But if you're aware of it, and if there are male characters, the story could come through that.
Yeah. I understand what you mean.
Actually, can I say, I've got quite a friend who's a GP, and I'd say if it was about her, she'd be some machos. You know, just because it is a woman, I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I haven't read this in particular. And she's a top cookie.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, and she never, ever, no matter what goes on, she doesn't let that facade drop it. But I think that is just her.
Well, Lois is...
And she does it because it suits her character in a way. She can do it because she is like that. And that's good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Well, Lois is a tough cookie as well. And I guess, yeah, I mean, she's a tough cookie. And she is not there to kind of personify what I see wrong with medicine, I suppose. Because then it would be a kind of polemic, I suppose. I didn't want to make it as a polemic. I wanted it to raise issues. But the issues are not necessarily have to be raised by her. They can be raised by her colleagues. I mean, I guess the guy who's a sort of fundamentalist Christian.
What we'll do
Christian.
When it's finished, bring it in.
Yeah, right.
The book that you've created in the meantime with the cardboard cover is a sort of halfway house between a sort of book art book and the traditional small press title. And I was wondering if you could just talk a little about the process of making that and your experiences with the British small press.
Well, I haven't got much experience with the British small press. It is certainly sort of halfway between an artist book, and that has come from being exposed to kind of bookbinders and book art and on the printmaking side of it, really. There's a big kind of printmakers, I'm involved with those kind of printmaking projects, and I'm a member of a printmakers workshop in Wrexham, and loads of printmakers are into book art and binding books, and we do kind of workshops about bookbinding, and a friend of mine is a bookbinder, and she kind of gave me the kind of materials, and so it was meant to be a kind of like an artist book, if you like, because I just saw that as, well, I like the kind of the feel and the sort of aesthetic of kind of handmade books, and you know, they're kind of quite intensive to make. It wasn't meant to be a, it could be seen as a kind of comment on kind of zines or comics, or, you know, it wasn't meant to be that. It was purely meant to be something that kind of just was quite nice to look at. And actually, sort of the other part of it was kind of vaguely meant to look like patient's notes as well, although it's kind of hand stitched, which patient's notes are not hand stitched, but it's kind of meant to vaguely look like kind of patient's notes, and it's got a kind of cardboard cover and stickers on it and stuff like that.
But obviously, I mean, you know, you're not creating comics in isolation, but are small press comic creators in North Wales eating thin on the ground?
Yeah, there are. There's a kind of a hot spot of comic creation around Wrexham, I think.
Yeah,
there's
with
Simon Brennan and Dan Berry. So there's maybe like a hot spot around there, but I'm kind of, I don't know many, you know, I don't know of any small press events. And I've kind of joined Manchester Comics Collective just over the internet. I don't really know any of them very well, but I kind of, Manchester seemed to be the closest kind of like centre really for comics. I keep meaning to get over there and go to their events and stuff, but so far I haven't really. So,
because I think you produced a very nice volume, and I think it would go down very well in a situation like the MCM Expo where they sell small press comics.
Yeah, I'd sent it with via Manchester Comics Collective. I down to Birmingham last year, and sort of, so they had it on their stand there, and I sold a few copies, and then it kind of came back to Travelling Man's. And yes, I should make more effort to get over to Manchester, but I don't. I just sit at home drawing and stuff. And so, but they seem to be the nearest kind of comic centre, if you like, of kind of lots of small press kind of activity. And,
for more info about comics that Ian creates under the nom de plume Tom Ferrier, please visit www.disrepute.info. That's DISREPUTE.info. And for more information about various comic book events curated by Ian, please go to www.graphicmedicine.org, where there's a call for papers for this year's British event, which is taking place in Leeds in November as part of this year's Thought Bubble Conference. The next meeting of Ladies Do Comics at the Rag Factory on Heneage Street off Brick Lane in London takes place on August the 22nd, and in the meantime you can hear a recording of the past month's meeting featuring Bristol-based cartoonists Andrew Godfrey and Katie Green at ladiesdopodcasts.wordpress.com. That's LAYDEEZDOPODCASTS.wordpress.com. Panel Borders was recorded, edited, and introduced by Alex Fitch, and you can find extended podcasts of previous shows at www.panelborders.wordpress.com, and Panel Borders will be back at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.